Welcome to the Sports Law Biz Podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in? Hello, this is Peter Ott with the Sports Law Biz Podcast. I'm here today with Ryan Fairchild, an associate attorney at the law firm of Brooks Pierce. He has a diverse practice, including a particular emphasis on the esports industry, which is what we're going to talk about today. He represents players, organizations, and stakeholders in a variety of contract, licensing, and corporate issues. Ryan also represents domestic and international clients in state and federal litigation, including in complex business, intellectual property, and constitutional matters. So it's good to have you here with us today, Ryan.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks, Peter.
Yeah, so this is something I've been meaning to do for a while, to talk to an attorney who works in this, you know, kind of new, exciting world of esports. Before we get too deep into that, can you give us a little background about yourself so we can better get to know you? Anything interesting?
Yeah, well, I usually take this question from the video game perspective and do a little retrospective of young Ryan, who first ran into video games watching his uncle and dad play Lode Runner on a black and green screen computer way back in the day. And I was sold immediately. I was like, whatever this is, I want it. And the first thing I ever saved up my allowance for was a Sega Genesis. And I think at that point, my dad was already over video games and was now concerned about the little monster he'd created, but I continued on with it. My first job ever was at a mini golf arcade place where I used to play fighting games like Street Fighter and Tekken against people who are now professionals that get paid to play those games back when we were just doing it for fun. And then I went to law school, wasn't thinking I was going to do anything with video games in particular, and I started playing a game called Dota 2, Defense of the Ancients. It was the original one. It was a mod for Warcraft 3, and I was playing the new version. And that was sort of a big mistake to start playing during law school because it was a huge time suck for somebody who did not have time for an additional time suck. But okay. It was a ton of fun, and I started watching people play it competitively. And I made a friend who was also at the University of North Carolina where I was going to law school. He was writing for a company. We became friends. We talked about esports. And when I got to a law firm, when I got to Brooks Pierce, and they were like, yeah, if you want to go chase that stuff, go for it. I got back in touch with him, and his name is Will Pardon, and he's a fantastic writer, and he put me in touch with some players, and from there it's just been growing and growing. So that's kind of the video game and esports quick version of how I got here.
Okay, and so you know you liked video games like a lot of people. You went to law school, like you said. The intention wasn't to be involved, to combine the law and video games, right? It was just something that came along. Once you were already a firm, you kind of took the initiative and saw kind of somewhere where you could get in, and that's where your esports practices come from.
That's right. So I was going through law school looking at litigation, and you know, went and did a federal clerkship and didn't take any intellectual property classes, any sports law classes, any entertainment law classes, because I didn't think it was viable. So, you know, I've obviously learned a lot since getting out of law school, but I was on a regular litigation track before seeing the opportunity.
Yeah, no, and in talking to a lot of people on this podcast, that's kind of a common thing. You know, the skills that you develop either in law school or in practice, you know, legal skills are going to apply regardless of whether your clients are banks or, you know, video game players. So,
yeah.
I guess those are probably slightly different skill sets, but the general practice is the same. So that's kind of an interesting background. So why don't we then go ahead and move into our general discussion. I think as a baseline matter, you know, this is a podcast for people interested in sports law and sports business. I think most people listening are probably familiar in some way with what esports is, but could you give us a quick background on what esports even is?
Yeah, so the simplest way to put it is competitive video games. You have players playing video games against each other, and they're getting paid. And you think about everything that basically gets involved with sports, with sponsors, with teams, even now with franchises and leagues, those are all coming into the mix. The biggest difference is you have a developer who makes a game, and they own the game. They own the intellectual property in that game. And then players out there, you know, you get your PlayStation, you get your Xbox, you get your PC, are playing the game, and then eventually enough people are watching it that it becomes an e-sport. So people are willing to actually go out and grab the top players and form teams and then have them play against each other. They broadcast it on Twitch. They broadcast it on TV. You get sponsors involved, all of that.
Okay, and so each individual video game is a separate esport.
That's right. And you could potentially have any game become an esport. It's just a matter of can you get sort of that competitive dynamic. So some games are naturally more geared for it.
Okay. And like you were saying, I think a difference between traditional sports and esports is that, you know, there's people that play basketball outside of the NBA. But from my understanding, esports, if you have an individual game, like you were saying, it's owned by the company that developed the game. And so that's kind of the universe of people playing that game professionally are all tied to the company that runs it. Is that a correct understanding?
That's right. So yeah, like you could, you know, there used to be the NBA and the ABA, but with a particular esport, it's who made the game.
Okay. So yeah, that changes the dynamic probably of, you know, negotiations and stuff like that.
Quite a bit.
Okay. And how many, you know, I've heard of Blizzard, you know, and there's these other companies. How many of these big companies developing games that turn into esports are there out there?
It depends on how many you count as esports. So Blizzard is obviously a big one with Overwatch League. They have Heroes of the Storm. StarCraft's been played competitively as well. Hearthstone. They've got a bunch of different games that have been in that space. You've got Riot, which makes League of Legends. You've got Valve, which makes Counter-Strike and Dota 2. You've got Ubisoft, which makes Rainbow Six. I don't remember every single developer and which game they're tied to, but Call of Duty, you've got Gears of War, you've got all of the different fighting games that come out. So Capcom's a big maker of various fighting games, as well as Namco. So you've got a bunch of different ones, and then it's kind of scale as well. It's like there are some really well-known esports, you know, your Counter-Strike, your League of Legends, your Overwatch, your Dota 2, those are kind of the really big players. And then you kind of have gradations of how well-known different esports are. So whereas you think of like traditional sports, stick and ball sports, you think NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL, and then you start to get, you know, more and more obscure to where you could say, you know, there are some people who play Ultimate Frisbee competitively and probably get paid some small amount if they win prizes or something, but a lot less people are watching that than the big four leagues and things like that.
Right, yeah, I know, like, when I was in high school, Madden was the big thing, and we would have these parties, and everyone would come over, and, they, you know, that was a competition, but it's not a very high-level competition. It's 10, you know, guys in my parents' basement or something like that. So that's not an e-sport, really, as it's just a video game, which is a, you know, part of, you know, every video game is necessary for an e-sport, but I guess not every e-sport is a video game, if that's one way to say that.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Every video game could be an esport, but not every.
There you go. That's a better way of saying it. Okay, and so then also, you know, I attended a panel recently on esports at the Sports Lawyers Association annual conference, and one thing that surprised me was the scope of esports. There was a presentation, and they were talking about how many people watch the NBA playoffs versus the Super Bowl versus, I think what they put on the screen was League of Legends, the mm-hmm. championship for that, and it dwarfed the number of people of individual, I think, streams watching even the Super Bowl. I mean, there's tons of people watching this. You know, I'm totally unfamiliar with that world, but, you know, is that kind of your experience, that there's a big scope of people involved?
Yeah, and I think one of the risks that sometimes we run into with the numbers is sort of comparing apples to oranges. Like the NFL, even though it is widely considered the biggest sports event, really, let's compare it to like the World Cup, right? Like when you get World Cup soccer, that gets everybody around the world watching. So with League of Legends, it's not just an American audience watching, it's everybody. So you get tons of Chinese viewers, tons of overseas viewers, as well as the American audience. Whereas with the Super Bowl, you're going to get, by and large, an American audience watching it. So there is a huge amount of scope, but I think there are different factors that play into that. So I think there's the global audience. I also think there's the medium of delivery, whereas with most of the major sports, you are going to watch them on TV, and more people are streaming them, but it's still primarily a TV audience. With esports, you're watching it in-game clients, you're watching it on Twitch, you can in some cases now watch it on TV. It's just there's a lot more delivery, but primarily it's coming through the internet. And so anywhere you have internet access, you're going to be watching it.
Okay. And then as far as competitions, these competitions work generally as some sort of tournament, like a round robin or a bracket or something, and that's how these competitive esports function. Is that correct?
Primarily, a couple of things have been changing. So you've had franchising in League of Legends and in Overwatch League, where there's a season and then there are playoffs. So it's moved much more towards that kind of traditional model. Whereas a lot of esports, Dota 2, Counter-Strike, and a lot of other ones, they focus on those tournaments. So they'll have a big event in Dallas. They just had one for Counter-Strike. They'll have one over in, right now, there was one going on in Birmingham in England. And they'll focus on these tournaments where a certain number of teams are invited, a certain qualify in through more minor qualifier tournaments, and then you'll have the big event. And then there's typically one big grand finals, international championships that happens in each one that'll happen once a year. And sort of, it's either an invitation system or they've started to move towards rankings based on tournament performance to be guaranteed spots in those championships. And then you'll still have qualifiers where basically anybody, like you and I, could put together a team and try to make it to the international for Dota 2. Probably won't, but
yeah, you don't, you know, want me on your team. I can guarantee you that. So, and you were saying, it sounds like, you know, there's variation in how this happens. There's different kinds of tournaments, different ways of breaking in. And I would imagine, as far as putting together people, these teams, you know, where do these teams come from? Like you said, people put together their own teams. I imagine there's sponsors that kind of put together teams, or is that how it works?
Yeah, so there are a lot of different ways, and it depends on what you're talking about. Like, so it could just be a group of five guys are playing online a particular game. They're like, hey, let's go try to get into this tournament or whatever. You're starting to get, obviously, a lot more entrenched teams that originally did something like that, but then they had some success, they brought in some sponsors, and then they start to buy up teams in other esports, or they try to get players onto their team. And you've seen that evolution. You have some of the really old teams where, honestly, it predates me, and I should better know the history. But you have, like, Complexity is considered one of the oldest esports teams. Optic Gaming, they got together. They got sponsors and everything. And then they eventually just played in these tournaments, won money, and got sponsors and kept building it. But a lot of times now, with how entrenched it's got, it's usually some org tries to bring in sponsors and grabs those players. There's not a lot of the organic, hey guys, let's get together and make a team anymore.
Okay. And then, as you've said, you know, money's involved, and I imagine that's what brings the lawyers to the table. So what do esports lawyers do? You know, you're one, I'm sure there's others. What does an esports lawyer do?
Any number of things. So I can talk more to my experience, but you can really get all over the place. But I largely deal with player contracts. So I will work with a player. They'll be getting offers from different teams. I'll review their contracts, give them advice, help to negotiate, draft language, and help them to close those deals. I've worked on intellectual property licensing agreements where, you know, you're trying to license out your IP to create a line of goods. So look over those licensing agreements, make sure they're tight, make sure you're protected, do trademark applications for your team. I think that's something actually players need to be thinking about, since they tend to have tags where it's not just their name, it's some sort of gamer tag that's going up. And I, you know, there's a lot of discussion about trademarking those as well. You also see more on the org end, I think especially with the franchising that happened in League of Legends and with Overwatch, that, for example, a big NBA franchise, the Warriors, the Heat, I'm trying to think of the Cavaliers, they all bought into NALCS for League of Legends or into Overwatch League, and there were acquisitions that were done. So you had a lot of those corporate deals. You have them setting up corporations and starting to make holding companies where they're going to have subsidiaries that do different things within the esports realm. So you can think about all of those deals as well. You're going to have assignments of contracts as players get traded. You're going to have buyouts as well. And so, I mean, it's a lot of transactional work. There has been a little bit of litigation, but not much, thankfully, although I think that in the future will be something that happens. Eventually, you're going to have unions and those I see labor and employment issues all the time. So it really runs the gamut of what you could have. Sponsorship agreements. There you go. You keep thinking about the possibilities, and you can keep naming different legal issues that come up where a lawyer would be helping.
Yeah, and so, you know, just in the things you've named, it sounds like a lot of these things are similar to what you would see in a typical sports franchise or something. I mean, you need to negotiate the sponsor agreements and player contracts and all that kind of stuff. So it's just kind of a new area which, you know, almost didn't exist or didn't exist really in a competitive framework where these same, you know, contractual principles are being applied in a different realm.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. As far as the player contract work that you've done, is that similar to, you know, a traditional agent who represents a player where the person negotiating those contracts would get a percentage of the money they make, or does it vary from player to player as far as how compensation works for both the player and the attorney representing them?
So I think it varies more from attorney to attorney. There are some attorneys out there who have started agencies or who act as agents. I've just frankly not done that yet. And I don't think that necessarily the way it works right now, I don't think there's a lot of need for players to be paying a percentage cut, frankly. I could have a long conversation about that in particular, but the way I've worked has been more as a lawyer. And then I have done sort of the agent type thing where you help them negotiate the contract, but not necessarily the take the cut of the contract that comes out.
And because you're not for a typical player, you know, you're negotiating that specific contract, and so it's just kind of like an hourly fee or a fixed fee or something like that, rather than a percentage of their future earnings in an ongoing relationship.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's also I compare it a little bit to the NFL as well, right? Like the NFL, you've got kind of 10 to 12 top guys who are really pulling in those big endorsement deals, and then you've got kind of the next 50 who might be pulling in kind of the mid-level ones, and then you've got sort of the rest of the player base. And I think that happens a lot in esports. You've got some really big stars, but you're not having the sponsorships be as wide-ranging as you might have in other sports yet. Yeah. I think that could happen with some esports quite well, where you could have a lot of different sponsorship deals. But that's one of the areas that I think is really interesting, where people are setting themselves up as esports agents. I'm always like, well, if you don't have those players who are really going to draw on those deals, you know, how are you benefiting them? So I think that players can benefit a lot from just paying somebody hourly or on a fixed rate, and lawyers can, you know, just benefit by trying to find the right price point that players want.
Yeah, no, and again, this is similar to other sports. I think a lot of intelligent athletes in different sports have realized that as well, that if you're not LeBron James or somebody else who's constantly getting all these sponsorship opportunities, you can save your, you know, 3% of $10 million is a lot of money. And if you're just paying an attorney at some fancy law firm to negotiate a specific contract, you're paying a high hourly wage, but it's a lot less than 3% of a giant contract. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So again, that's kind of the same thing that we keep coming back to, where, you know, the issues that seem to arise are similar. I guess the main difference, you know, at least from my perspective, and you can tell me if you think this is correct or not, but it seems like because esports as an industry is relatively new, it's almost like the Wild West, where kind of the powerful actors are still getting situated and it's getting figured out, you know, how all this stuff is going to work.
Yeah, and the Wild West is an analogy that gets used quite a bit. With that, you have a lot of people trying to set themselves up as agents, where I've seen some agency agreements where I'm like, I don't, you know, wouldn't tell even my worst enemy to sign these things. And some that look solid, you know, I've seen some where players have brought them to me and I'm like, yeah, this looks fine, you know, be aware of this and this, but otherwise. So you do have a lot right now where you have to be careful who you work with and what you're doing, and like the Wild West, you know.
Yeah.
Buyer beware is a big thing right now.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's if we have any esports listeners out there, you know, take that into consideration. Okay. And has there been any, are you aware of any, you know, talks or anything to try and regulate esports, you know, from, I guess it's an international thing, so that makes regulation a little more difficult.
Yeah. So, well, it is an international thing, but I haven't heard anything on the government end so much. There was just recently formed the Esports Bar Association, actually, and the inaugural conference is happening next month in LA. I'll be helping to moderate a panel there. But that was formed, I think, in large part to try to start thinking about these issues before you start having government regulators looking at them, so we can self-regulate and get these issues figured out without needing somebody else who doesn't necessarily understand the space trying to do it. But in terms of the regulation going on right now, I don't think there's any particular scrutiny on it, at least not that I've seen, other than the scrutiny you would get for other issues that you would get for sports generally or for different entertainment issues. So a lot of esports agents look at the regular sports agent rules, and they, you know, some of them say, even though this might not apply, we're still going to apply them. And some people say, you know, this doesn't apply to us. It's a different industry. And it depends on which state and what language you're looking at as well. So the regulation comes sort of implicitly through other laws that regulate other spaces.
Right. Okay. I guess if there was a listener right now who's hearing this talk, this is something they'd never heard of. You know, they're thinking, I like video games. I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do with my career or whatever. What would you say to them about kind of opportunities from a legal perspective for working in this industry?
Yeah, that is a question I get a lot. I talk to typically one young lawyer or law student every week who has sort of those questions. And I don't have a set answer. I think a big thing is you do want to take the right kind of classes. I kind of wish I'd taken a couple different classes. But with where I'm at now, you want to get to a firm either that is doing work sort of in the space or that will let you do work in the space. And I think the most important thing is start getting to events, start networking, start making connections. I think that's the most important thing. And show that you know the space, or at least are willing to learn it. Because of how much of the Wild West it is, there's a lot of speculation and a lot of people saying, all right, is this person actually here because they're a gamer and because they like this, or are they just trying to make a quick buck? And frankly, I think it's like anything else where if you're trying to make a quick buck, you know, go be an investment banker. You know, go do something else where you can make money. If you like games and you like the law and you want to combine them, do that. But, you know, it's really about getting to know people and showing that you're authentic.
Yeah. Again, this is similar to feedback that I get when I talk to attorneys who work in sports generally. You know, an interest in sports, or in this case in esports, is kind of a necessary but not sufficient, right? It's a lot of people like sports, a lot of people like video games, but you have to, you know, demonstrate knowledge of what's going on. You know, you have to have some kind of value that you can add through your legal services. And so, you know, if you're a law student, you can better understand things and develop your skills. Or if you're a currently practicing lawyer, you know, you want to be good at whatever you're doing and develop those negotiation skills. It sounds like in your experience, that's what's the big mover right now is transactions. And as it becomes, as more money becomes involved, I'm sure litigation will follow like it does in other professional sports leagues. And I think that's good advice generally, and it's consistent what I've heard from a lot of smart people out there.
So. Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. Be good at what you do, be smart, and keep practicing those skills, and just find a way to combine the two.
Okay, well, now we're getting close to the end of our time here. Is there anything else you'd like to add as far as your wisdom about where esports is now and where it's going?
As far as where it's going, I think that it's going to continue to sort of consolidate, and you're going to see more people trying to figure out what is the correct model in terms of franchising versus sort of this open circuit model that has happened in Dota 2 versus other things, other models that you might have. I think you're going to keep seeing innovation in that front. I think you're going to see eventually player unions emerging, and you're going to see collective bargaining agreements and things like that. I think that's a natural next step in a lot of areas. I do think the other thing that's always going to make esports interesting is you're going to have new things coming out. So, you know, Counter-Strike has been around forever, and if I had to put my money on anything being around forever, it would be Counter-Strike. But you have Fortnite coming in, and a lot of people are debating, well, is it really an esport? Do you have to play it competitively first? It's still going to be an entertainment industry, and you're going to have new games coming out that can disrupt the space or be a new source of revenue that a lot of people are going to watch. And so that's going to keep the industry on its toes, I think, a lot more than traditional sports where you've had these games that have been played for decades or, you know, even over 100 years that are so entrenched that you know what you're getting, you know what you're doing, you know what you're going to watch tomorrow. Whereas with esports, next year it could be a completely different game that you're watching and trying to figure out the ecosystem for. So it's always going to be evolving, and that's one of the things I really like about it. Beyond that, I mean, you just had the Supreme Court decision, and so gambling and esports and sports generally is going to be a big thing to watch. Yeah, those are kind of the things that have been on my mind a lot. Employment issues, gambling, and what the next thing is going to be.
Okay, yeah, no, that's I didn't even think about gambling. I guess, you know, people watch these things on, you know, Twitch or whatever other platform there is. I guess, you know, potentially, and this is just me, you know, spitballing out there, but there's probably some way to build in some kind of functionality where you could even bet right on in the program that you're using to watch the esports, because it's already a technologically based thing. I don't know if that's possible, but that sounds like that would be interesting in a way that would be easier to integrate betting into these kind of things, easier than it would be in you know, an on the field product.
Yeah. And then there are other issues that I think will be interesting. The like the intellectual property issues that are coming up with it, I think will be really interesting, like trademarking gamer tags, or what sort of copyright interest does a player have in his playment of a game or her playment of a game. You know, the developer may own the IP, but if I go in and I stream something and I do something with the game, what sort of intellectual property rights do I have in that?
Sounds like there's a lot to be working on in the future. So I'm sure that'll keep you and other esports attorneys busy going forward. So thanks for sharing all this with us. I found this to be a really spectacularly fascinating discussion. I'm interested to see where this goes, and I'm glad we're getting you early on in the process. And I'm excited to see, you know, your rise through the esports lawyer ranks. So
I appreciate that. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to working in the industry and also working more with sports industry people as well. I've already been opposite some general counsels for sports teams trying to work on their esports side of things. So I'm looking forward to it. And thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And you know, if you get more esports questions in the future, happy to come back and talk some more.
Yeah, no, yeah, this was a great interview, and you know, as more people come to understand things, I think it would be great to talk more about specific issues. So yeah, thanks for joining the Sports Law Biz podcast, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Take care.
This has been an episode of the Sports Law Biz podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Law Biz website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend, Lieb Montoya, for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo, as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is @LiebMontoya in both places. That's @LIBMontoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank the musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is Sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott. And you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, @PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, @SportsLawBiz, or through email at sportslawbizblog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.